Welcome to Starfleet Universe On Call. I am Paul Franz, owner of Franz Games. I run SMB Online, FedCom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Just a reminder how to join us. We have Talkcast every Thursday night starting at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either join us on the phone, just dial 724-444-7444. Just follow the directions 17702. Or you can participate on the web. Just go to the TalkShoe website at www.talkshoe.com and search for call ID 17702. And if you need to contact me for any reason, my email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. That's sfuoncall@gmail.com. Also, if you need to reach me, just give me a Skype. My Skype ID is Franz Games, FranzGames. And if you want to, you can follow me on the Twitters. My account for the podcast is sfuoncall@gmail.com. sfuoncall. And, of course, my personal account is Paul Franz. So to find me, my account on Twitter, my personal account, just go to twitter.com/PaulFranz. And, of course, my last other account is Franz Games, spelled just like the Skype. And, of course, it's a lovely Talkcast, Good Turn podcast, available on iTunes and various other feeds around the net. Some quick news from ADB. Some sad news, which is the creator of the Interstellar Concordium, Josh Spencer, was transferred to Blackfleet. In other words, he died. It's sad to see him leave, but, you know, my understanding is that he had cancer and, you know, he was suffering, and I'm glad for his, you know, suffering's over with. Of course, we're all saddened that he's gone. Moving forward, the new one, Warehouse 23, drive-through RPG and Wargame Vault this week was Nexus number 7, of course. Beautiful scan of that it's an issue of Nexus. Steve Cole was busy working on Cap's log number 53, you know, the various blogs and art for the Gorn Master Starship book, you know, dealing with Shapeways as usual. Also, Steve Petrick was busy working on SCP updates, also the Gorn Master Starship book. Gene was busy working on, of course, uploading things up the Shapeways, of course, working on the newsletter, and also continuing to beat down the spam assault on the BBS. And also announced on the blog this past week was coming soon is a new Shapeways mini, which is the Klingon E5 Battle Corvette /Escort. Actually, I looked at this ship, and this is one of those ships that looks quite interesting. It has the normal Gorn boom. Klingon boom, I'm sorry. The Klingon boom, you know, but the back end is a single engine, which is, if I recall correctly, it's like an F5, single engine from an F5, which makes it really, in my mind, quite interesting, because these are the kind of ships I like. They break the mold. Yes, they're still very recognizable as Klingon, but they're not the standard Klingon, you know, where you have your boom, and then you have the rear hull, and then rear hull you have the two engines, possibly three, where you have a center engine attached to maybe the boom, or attached to the boom and on the underside. That's about as dramatic that the Klingons get. But this is, you know, this is one of the things that's kind of is new and interesting in that, you know, it's kind of, as I said, kind of breaks from the mold, but it's still definitely recognizable as Klingon. Moving onward to the, there it is, conventions. Just a reminder, starting tomorrow, so today is 19th of July, tomorrow is the 20th. The 20th starts the Starfleet Battles Tournament run by Battle Group Toronto, up in Toronto, Ontario. The location is going to be 986 Bloor Street West. That's B-L-O-O-R. I'm hoping I'm pronouncing that correctly. That's Ontario, you know, Toronto, Ontario. M6H1L8 is the location. Playing days are all Friday through Sunday. Every single day. It starts 9 a.m. in the morning and ends at 8 p.m. at night. So starting tomorrow, that's tomorrow the 20th, that they will be starting running this tournament. Now, the tournament is $25 per day to play using the normal tournament rules. If you want to play for all 3 days, or even if you want to play for 2 days, it's $45 for the whole. You can pay $45 for a 3 day weekend. Obviously, if you want to, if you want to save a little money and you only want to go play for 2 days, I'm sure they'd be happy to give you the 3 day rate for 2 days. So you can save at least $5. Kids accompanied by adult are no charge. Visitors also are welcome to come by, watch people play Starfleet Battles. But if obviously you want to play, you have to put in your $25. Also, this week, campaigns. We actually have one which I actually talked to one of the people involved, and they wanted it announced, which was Matt's Dramatic Universe campaign. The website is sfbdrama.matnet.org. It's SFB Drama in Starfleet Battles, Drama, Matnet, that's MATTNET.org. Go check it out. It looks like quite an interesting campaign. Moving onward to the SFB Online tournaments, we have, of course, the Masters Tournament, which is run by Andrew Koch. And he is, so we have 7 games played. We still have more done. I still got to get back to my dear sweet friend, Grim. We need to finish up that. Hopefully I can play him some more this weekend or possibly this upcoming week. This past week I might have been able to play, but the week before that, it was up. No way in hell. Just because I was just way too busy. Moving on to the Rat 48 tournament by Ron Brinmeyer. We have 5 games actually played. That means actually there's still more games to be played. Please, people, get on that. Same for the Masters tournament. It's taking way too long. We should be all done round one. Got most of round two done. I will have to agree that part of the issue for Masters was me, and I will get that done. So at the very least, I am not the hold up. Moving forward to the library. Sorry, no progress there. I think I got some stuff. I might have gotten some from Frank. I have to double check on that, whether those were updates or actually submissions. And if they're submissions, I apologize for not processing them. I was busy this week with Burning Archery Club stuff. The Burning Archery Club's club I'm involved in. But so that means the complete conversions still stay at 2,426. Yet to be converted 906, and percent complete is 72.8%. That is the news for this week. And it's me, it's the one, the only, the Paul Franz, welcoming you to Starfleet Universe On Call. And tonight, well, it looks like me and Dave, but that doesn't matter, does it? Of course, the question, more important question is, why aren't you here? Why aren't you, at least in the chat room, chilling out, discussing with Dave and Russ and MG and all the guys who stopped by at TalkShoe.com? Now, actually, believe it or not, that's going to be the first topic for this evening. One correction on the news portion, which I did not realize that they were instantiating today. And I'm hoping that the old phone number still works, at least for today, because they announced it 2 days ago, which is they're going to deactivate the 724 number. They have a new number. That phone number is 605-562-0444. Now, I have not tried the new number. According to them, they're supposed to be activated at 1 o'clock July 19th. Let me just double check this, but I'm pretty sure that they didn't do something which is kind of important in this day and age. And let me just look at this for a moment. That is correct. They did not, which I want to smack them side the head for. Anyone who's dealt with internationally with people overall, especially when it comes to the internet and invariably, you're dealing with people not just in your own time zone, but in possibly multiple time zones over. Now, obviously, TalkShoe, I don't think we have people calling in from India. So that's not a big deal. But here's the deal. They said 1 o'clock on July 19th. What time zone? Really? I just double checked on the email because it's like, okay, they didn't do this, did they? Please tell me they didn't do this. They did not pick a time zone. So is it that it's just going to be a rolling time zone? Depending upon what time zone you're in, it will use that phone number based on that? Or was 1 p.m. kind of arbitrary and the old phone number still works? And it'll work until tomorrow? And they just kind of go, yeah, it'll still work. Don't worry about it. So it's 1 o'clock. Yes, 1 o'clock, wherever you are. It will be activated. So anyway, and just a reminder that phone number again is 605-562-0444. And that will be the new dial-in number for people that use TalkShoe. Now, another thing that I just found out today, when I was actually going through this email and really checking into a little more detail, and that is that supposedly the beta program, they said, it's a sandbox. They let people sign up as of last week. I'm not so sure the sandbox is going to be occurring anymore if they still keep sandbox going and they saw that people were fine and it looks good, you know, or are they just that fast on rolling things out from what was sandbox phase to the actual phase? So I don't think that'd be kind of crazy, but hey, you never know. I don't know these guys, the new owners for TalkShoe. I don't know how they think, you know. But one thing they did announce, which I missed because I don't really follow the news portion, which actually reminds me, I need to check to see if there's an RSS feed for their blog. Because if there is, I'll add that. So maybe I'll pay attention more because actually, I'm still old school that way. Yes, I still have an RSS reader. I think I use NewsBlur, though I think a lot of people don't think NewsBlur is really. I forget what the current latest, not the latest thing, but the thing, the RSS feeder that people really like to use. Ever since Google's Reader went, they said, "Oh, we're going to support it." I'm to this day, honestly, I don't know why they dropped it. It was really popular, especially for. Maybe they just figure out it ain't worth the time, so it ain't worth the money to keep it running. But here's the thing. As Apple found out the hard way, the real geeks, those are the people that you really need to be concerned about for the only one case, which is in the case of Apple, you still need this really high-end hardware that people are going to, at the very least, aspirationally want to buy. When it comes to Google dropping RSS feeders, I know that's a really geeky thing, but you're going to lose people. That was one of the few things that I actually tied into of the Google's products. Currently, I'm limited now to Gmail, and I have a Google group. That's it. And even those, I don't really log into Google. Most of the time, for Gmail, I access it via IMAP connection using my actual, believe it or not, surprise, surprise, an actual email client. Shocker. You know, I know I'm still old school when it comes to that. Some people say, why you do that? Just use a browser. It's like, well, the browser's going to track every single thing that you do. So that's why I don't. So Google wants you to log in and stay logged in so they can track you all over God's creation. So. No, thank you. But anyhow, and you know, then of course the Google Groups again is an email list. Same thing. So every once in a while I have to log into the account, and I do that, and I log out, and I use my Firefox browser, which I have set up, so when I close the browser, it kills the history. So whatever. So they can't track what I'm doing in that case. Sorry, I digress there for a moment. But one of the things that, getting back to TalkShoe, one of the things that TalkShoe did announce this past week is also something which I used to use way back when, which was there was a TalkShoe client itself. And looks like on June 6th, that's over a month ago, they actually had announced that from the looks of it, well, it was modified on the 6th. They say there is a pro client. Now, I have not actually checked out the pro client because I'm not sure if it's the old client, in which case it doesn't work on the Mac anymore. Because the only reason I even mentioned that it might not be up to date is because I'm go here and it's under Solution Home, TalkShoe Help, Legacy TalkShoe Support. So that always concerns me. But some other things that I did find out, which is new, which is TalkShoe Sandbox 101. How does the new TalkShoe site compare to the old site? And this might be just for the sandbox, where they for audio streaming they removed the requirement for Flash. Now, the new TalkShoe it actually does video streaming, which is cool. Also, stream hosts a YouTube channel. So we have a YouTube channel. We can stream that. Yeah. Okay. So it says host must configure their host link to their YouTube channel. I have a YouTube channel, but it's not associated with the same account. And some other looks like wonderful things. You can share documents, desktops, all kinds of really neat stuff. Now, the question I have about some of the stuff overall looks really good. Is it for the current TalkShoe website, or do you have to go to the special Sandbox site? Actually, let me look at this for a moment. So related articles. What is a Sandbox? New TalkShoe now available as a personal sandbox. TalkShoe is launching a brand new website. Okay, so it's a new website with new features, functionality, and reliability. We're opening up the new website and featuring our top users in a sandbox form. We're happy to have you here. And, right, I got to sign up for a sandbox account. I have not done that yet. Okay, our feeds are not functional on the sandbox site. Okay, that's fine. I'm assuming that what they plan on doing is replacing the old site with a new sandbox site. That's my assumption. Or unless they're just going completely for the sandbox. Okay. I'm going to look at more on the sandbox site and I'll get back to you on that. So it should be quite interesting to see how TalkShoe moves forward. Definitely is showing promise that I might be willing to stay with TalkShoe. I got to see how this whole sandbox thing works and if it looks like, you know, you can create new. I might have to create a new account on a sandbox site. I'm not sure if they're going to say, well, we're not going to update the current site to be what's on sandbox or what. So. But we'll have to wait and see. Now, still remember the old dial-up number just in case the new one doesn't work. Because I've not tried the old one or the new one. I have not tried either one, so hopefully that will work. So, that's a quick update about TalkShoe that I got the email a couple of days ago, and I apologize, just got reading about it, so I should have noted this on the news portion, but actually, it might be good for Dave and anyone else who was in the chat room. Currently, it's just Dave. But as I said, you know, come on. Come join us. You know, 9:30 on Thursday night. Hopefully, nothing's going on. And as it's during football season, when there's a Thursday night game, actually, I know Dave watches the football game while he listens to me. You know, so. And we get to... If you've been on the podcast long enough, you will realize Dave keeps an eye on the score and updates me ever so often, which is quite interesting. If I recall correctly, Dave's a Yankees fan too. Correct, Dave? I'm waiting for him to respond. But he definitely is a football fan. I usually don't watch football until after baseball season's over in November. Yeah, so I thought Dave was a Yankees fan. He is. I'm sure he's quite happy about this year's Yankees. I'm an Orioles fan, and family fans more. Well, I'm sure you're pretty happy about the Phils, though obviously they didn't get Machado, at least at the moment. And my only question for the Phils is, will they actually be able to convince Machado to leave the Dodgers? I know they're... See, that's the one thing that... I'm just going to mention this real quick, and then we'll get back to Starfleet Universe on call. And that is about the Phils and Machado. I think my own thing that I was thinking about with Machado, which was that whoever gets him, obviously the Dodgers got him, they have a wonderful opportunity. And that is for 2 months. They've got him. And for those 2 months, possibly more, if they go into the postseason, they got him for all that time. And they have a good team leading up next year. Definitely, you can convince Machado to stay. And you'd be easier to convince him to stay because you grow friends and not limit the power of time. So who will be more likely to be able to sign Machado for a long-term contract? That's going to be a person who currently has him now, who's able to convince him to woo him during this period of time. Now, obviously, the big thing is going to be money, if they can pay the money too, because Machado's going to get over a $200 million contract. It should be interesting to see how that whole thing plays out. Dave says food on the Eagles. Yeah, the Super Bowl champs, Eagles. Let's not get started there. But, okay, let's get back to us. If you're on call, sorry for that brief interruption into sports, especially if you're a geek. You probably fell asleep during that portion. Sorry. I apologize. But whatever. One last thing about Machado, I'm going to miss him. I was hoping beyond all hope he could be another Brooks Robinson, another Cal Ripken Jr. That great player, cornerstone player, stayed with Orioles from day one and stayed there the whole entire time. But, you know, short of dishing out the money, you know, heck, it is possible that we could sign Machado if we decided to make him a cornerstone player. I don't think so. I see more like Gausman being signed a long-term contract. But again, sorry, I'll stop now. Just so that we can say that, okay, we're done talking about that. Now, moving forward, on to the next topic. I'm going to hit that topic because I'm switching topics one and two. For those people who didn't read the summary of what the topics are, you don't care. But the next topic for this evening is a really quick update on where Starfleet Marines Online currently is. That is, I had a chance to take a look to see where it is in the whole thing, and obviously there's still some work to do. One thing I wanted to get done, but I'd rather have it available in people's hands, so at the very least, interface-wise, people can check it out, use it, and go, okay, this is what needs to change. And that is, currently, the only one empire in the Marines, that is the Romulans. Can't do that. We're gonna need to have different colors. We're gonna need the Gorns. We're gonna need the Romulans. We're gonna need the Federation. The Klingons. All of these different empires. At least a good selection. We could probably stick with the Omegas at the moment, and we'll be good. Or even not even all the Omegas. I don't plan on doing Orions. Short of a campaign. when do you actually have Orions in combat? This is not something that Orions are known for. You know, and yes, they're mercenaries, but they can be mercenaries, but I don't think there's been any piece of fiction where it discusses Orions having a whole platoon of mercenaries, like Hammer Slammers, that kind of deal. It's possible they do it, and actually, that's one question that maybe I'll ask Steve Cole about, which is, did the Orions actually have mercenary units, where they actually had, larger units that you might see on a battlefield per se? I have a hard time believing that. I can imagine them. You have an Orion mercenary group. I can imagine that having a squad or maybe a couple squads. I don't think the Orions were into the whole Hammer Slammers kind of thing, where you basically have a whole company which you buy. They have under contract. You know? Don't know. I'll have to check with Steve Cole to see if that was even a thing. Because it's possible it might be. I don't know. When we find out is to ask Steve Cole. It's possible we might say, well, there might have been, in which case, if it says that, that would mean that the Orion mercenaries on the battlefield is possible. So I'll definitely check out on that. But okay, but still, when it comes to the Starfleet Marines module of the SFU online client, or SFU online client, sorry. I've been trying to change that for years, and it still just slips up because it was directed at SFB when it started, and I keep on saying SFB online client when it's SFU online client, because it's not just Starfleet Battle, it's also FedCom. I want it to be all things, to as much as possible. But anyhow, so that needs to be done. Looks like the phases don't work. I don't know why. They just don't. In other words, I click next phase, it doesn't go into the next phase, which is kind of important to do so that you actually can move forward through the phases. The one thing I wanted to do, but I think, as I said, I'm sorry, I mentioned it kind of cursory, but I didn't say what it was. I'm sorry. I apologize. The one thing that I wanted to get done, but I'd rather get things out sooner than later, and that is the one thing I wanted to do actually was train and not just have it so people could build maps, but have it so the maps actually have terrain, and the terrain then could use it, use the client to look at the terrain and then keep track of movement of the units, so the units didn't exceed what they're actually allowed to do. And that is something that I will have to look into later, but I think more important is to have more empires and to have the phases working. Because a lot of the other stuff still there from the original GUB client, way back when, and that is line of sight. There's still line of sight strings that you can lay down on the board. So the whole idea of the line of sight strings to begin with was just to measure line of sight. And since you currently have them, you can actually add them. Let's make sure, add a line of sight string. And I can put it there, and I can put it over here. And the line of sight strings work quite nicely. You can grab the ends, and you can drag it to anywhere you want to. So it's quite cool. The line of sight strings work quite well, and I think it's definitely a feature that's needed in Marines, So then you can move your pieces around and move them all around you want, which works. And the moving, obviously, if moving didn't work, we'd be in trouble. But movement works fine. As I said, there's no measurement of movement. So that's something that you'd have to take care of when it comes to measurement. But again, according to the rules, I'm pretty sure that you have to move the Marines one piece at a time. And so the whole idea is that you don't move this piece so many, then you move another piece, then you go back and move the first piece. No, I don't think that actually is part of the rules. But if I recall correctly, you take a piece, you move it, and then that's it. Now, obviously, you can later on go back and adjust. Go, wait a minute, I didn't really want to move it there, so you can put it back to the original position and move it again. So that should be good. So I need to do that. I need to So now, obviously, you can still use. You can create your maps. The whole map thing that works for SFB works in this, which is custom maps have to be a certain directory structure and so forth. One thing that we're probably going to need to do. One thing about the maps is the maps are going to be the crude version of the maps, i.e. just colors. This color means this, this color means this, this color means this. And that's it. Versus, how you have these gorgeous, and I do mean gorgeous, maps that are included in Starfleet Marines. In theory, I could probably see if I could use them. The tough part about that, obviously, is matching up. I'm not sure if I can get it so that I can get it without the hexes. Because, and then have it so that I can draw the hexes on. I can just make sure that the hex size is correct, that it matches the map, and have that as the background. In theory, it's possible. I'd have to wait and see. I probably would start with is see if I can scan in the maps and just try it out. See how it would work. See if I can get it to them so that the maps, I can get the hexes to just maybe overlay on top of the current hexes that are on top and on the map itself. Or do I need to get it so that it's completely removed and so that the hexes that are drawn on top of the map will pretty much match up with what is there. But since they're not, the hexes aren't there, the little having it so it's a little off here, a little off there, won't be noticed. So, but we would probably start with rudimentary maps. Maps would be map overlays. And what would be nice to do is if someone could create some of the maps that are in the the Starfleet Marines, the hard maps that come in that. I forget if there's any soft maps. Yeah, they're soft maps. I'm sorry, they're not hard maps. I thought they were hard maps, like it was included in FedCom, but they're not hard maps. Cardboard maps. They're more like the folding maps that are available, which is kind of cool. Who is it? Is it Fulton? Zoltan Fulton, I think it is. Is the guy who did the was that? I think that was him who did the Starfleet Marines maps, the beautiful maps. And I remember seeing the rudimentary maps that Steve Cole started with. Which makes sense because, when you're first building a product, you don't create these high glossy maps that you may never use because it's going to cost quite a bit. You know, you get the rudimentary maps and you play test on the rudimentary maps. Hey, Russ. Sorry you can't stay for long. But it's nice to have you. Nice to have you stop by. But anyhow, those are two big things I notice. I have not checked to make sure that multiple players can add pieces. I have no concern with that. Obviously, it should stick with the same idea when it comes to that. And that is that just like SFB and Fed, I'm pretty sure FedCom works the same way. Get them all kind of here. Log in, and let me. I'm just going to do one quick thing here. There. I'm just going to do that. And, right. So it's just normal, which is a player can ask to be switched to player mode from observer mode, in which case, you know, you both should be able to place pieces on the board and play out the scenario at that point. Of course, I'm looking at some of the icons at the top of the board and going, having a starship doesn't really match what we're doing, but I don't think it's that big of a deal. So, let me just look at it. Close that. Yeah, I was really checking offline. So, in other words, I had no clue whatsoever if the whole player mode thing should work. Which it should. You know, it's something generic functionality is part of the client. So, any room you're in should be doing that. So, that will be. Hopefully, I can get that out the door. So at the very least, rudimentary Starfleet Marines is available, and if people want to play Starfleet Marines, they can play it online. I actually would like to see if I can grab somebody. So at least I can play it. I think that'd be kind of cool. Okay, moving forward. Actually, I want to discuss the next topic, which is an idea I have, and it's one of those things that if I ever decide to do, which I, at the moment I don't plan on doing, just put it out there right now, just because that's one thing I actually spent a bit of time while bowling. Strange thing to do. While I was bowling, I was actually marking down, okay, this is what I'm doing. Try to get an idea of where I am. And everything that I'm doing, from bowling to cantering to running SFB Online, running Starfleet Warlord, I hadn't written this all up. There's still quite a few other things because I only gotten through certain things. And it's probably going to be like 2 pages long of things what I am doing. And some of the things that I want to do, some of the things that I plan on doing, one of the things I want to plan on doing is, and this really doesn't, for most people it doesn't matter, but for me it's kind of one, it betters me as learning, in the category of learning when it comes to technology, and hopefully with my daytime, now my day job, but I can use what I'm doing with for SFB Online and all that kind of thing to do it. Also, it really helps out in one category, which I don't really have a plan for, per se, except for freaking out and doing my best to try to recover. And that is the whole idea of automating the whole creation of all my websites. Because currently it's all hand done. You know, and some of it I should be able to automate the whole process. And, you know, I want to change the process for how the websites get updated and things like that. Things that would be nice and would make it easier to recover, easier to if I lost the site completely, to just, okay, wipe out that server, recreate it, boom, I'm back in business, maybe like in an hour, possibly less. Might be more, because I think the one thing, well, actually, no. Since I think currently, I have to double check this, but I'm pretty sure my DNS goes through my hosting company. As long as I don't lose my hosting company, which is possible, I could lose my hosting company, DigitalOcean, but they've been growing and they're doing good. But you never know. Denial of service or whatever could kill them, and I have to switch to a different people, whether it's AWS or Microsoft Azure or whatever, you know, whatever cloud company I'd have to move to. But, you know, it would make the disaster recovery a lot faster than currently. And, you know, so, and it also brought some other deficiencies that I have. You know, make sure I have proper backups, and the backups are done on a more consistent basis is the big thing at the moment. They're catch as catch can, you know, I do it here, do it there. You know, I don't do it like every single day. I do a backup of everything, which is one thing I really should be doing. And I have to set up an automated process to do that. And the question is, where will I set the automated process up? You understand the issue. Now, but you know, that's just one of those things. And that's why I bring that up, just to say that there's no plan to bring what I call Prime Directive board game to life. But I thought it would be an interesting topic, at the very least, to bring up the thought of Prime Directive board game to life. Obviously, it's something that I could do because it's a board game, and the SFU online client is designed for board games. Now, given that given it's designed for board games, and okay, I call it Prime Directive board game for this one thing, which is, obviously, Prime Directive mainly is an RPG game, role-playing game. Now, these days, at least from what I've seen of Dungeons & Dragons and what I've seen them play. Now, I'll have to admit, I have not actually spent too much time at the Dungeons & Dragons tables just to watch them, and just for like 15 minutes or half an hour just watching how they played. But from what I've seen from the times I've actually stopped by the tables, take a look, see what they're doing. Anytime there's anytime there's an interaction with anything, instead of having them to imagine in their minds what the room looks like, what they do is they actually have a physical board where they play out the battles. Now, obviously, certain times there's no reason to have to play out the battle or have a board, i.e. when you're going down a dungeon. Well, not going down a dungeon. Dungeons make sense to actually have everything, you know, on a board, because then it gives the players a sense of what's down the hallway. You know, is it 150? Is it 200 feet? Is it 10 feet? Is it 150 feet when they're looking down the hallway? You know, it gives them an idea. Now, obviously, you've got the whole issue, which even in Starfleet battles you have, which is tack intel, basically. That is the whole idea of being, you have a dark hallway. You have a torch. That torch only allows you to see maybe, let's say, 30 feet in front of you. Even at 30 feet, it's kind of, you know, whispery. So showing that you can't see past 30 feet is a challenge if you actually have them have a board. You know, but you can understand that. But what I'm thinking about of a prime, what I call a prime directed board game, and that is this whole idea of some of these 8-bit graphics computer games. You know, that is you move around the board and you do these different interactions. Now, being prime direct, being as a, you know, being a board game based, I'm thinking hex based. Obviously, we can have sort of square based, especially when it comes to RPGs. Square seems to be the way to go. The only reason I say that is because it seems that's what the way most of them play, which is they use squares instead of hexes. Hexes are mainly designed for tactical, you know, ships, combat. So you can actually have turns and you turn slowly and so forth. You know, for people, you're standing, you know, straight ahead. You might be standing to the right, standing to the left. You know, most people think about it in terms of a compass, not terms of a hex. And makes, Lord knows, the problem with hex is that most layouts, you know, come on, like, let's say Baltimore. That's a good example. Most part, Baltimore is a grid. Unlike in Washington, which is circular, and that's freaking nuts. But anyhow, that is either, all the angles are 90 degrees. You don't have things going off in a spiral fashion where things are in 60 degree angles. No, it's either, usually it's like 0 or 90 or 180 or 270. That's the direction that you're facing. So in that case, okay, if you actually want to have it, so the prime directive changed the RPG game to be more of a board game from more role-playing game where, you know, that you have a GM that describes the dungeon or where you are. It describes everything to you. And that's fine. But it's great. I've played role playing games like that, and I've actually had a lot of fun. I haven't played for years, though. But, you know, it's kind of cool. But let's say prime directive as a board game. And that is, that's, you know, do you want to have tack and tell? We could probably, that's one of the things you could do with a computer-based board game. You actually could do tack and tell to a certain degree. You have line of sight, and you can't see anything, any of the maze or any of the, if it's a dungeon, let's start with a dungeon type thing. Now, obviously, for Prime Directive, it wouldn't be considered a dungeon, quote unquote. It'd probably be like a star base or a ground base or someplace in, if it's an indoors, it's probably a base is where you find it, or a complex, because of, you could have a laboratory complex, because one thing that actually comes to mind, as strange as it might sound, is the Clone Wars. But one of the reasons why that comes to mind now is because of, I heard Clone Wars are actually, they just announced at Comic-Con that they're going to have a seventh season. Basically, a seventh season to wrap it all up. A final season for that. Now, that's one of those, let's mention real quickly, that's one of those TV series that my son loved. And he loves, and he keeps watching it. So to say, at the very least, I know those episodes pretty well. Though the latter episodes, not so much. Like the fifth and sixth seasons. And I think about some of the fifth and sixth seasons. I haven't watched actually like the last episodes. But the fifth and sixth seasons, so there's certain things that happen that the question is, when they put in the seventh season, because I saw a trailer, the question is, what are they going to do to resolve? I know there's some things that are unresolved. I don't know those, what those are, because I have not watched everything. But anyway, you know, so I just want to make sure they don't mess it up for Star Wars Rebels. Because I like Star Wars Rebels, which they also shut down. It's like, you gotta be kidding me. I love this. That's one great thing about Star Wars and cartoons. Because cartoons, you can do all this kind of stuff relatively cheaply versus having live actors. Yeah, it's still kind of expensive, especially these days where everything's computer generated graphics, you know, and it's not just, you know, flat 2D, it's 3D stuff and all that kind of stuff. So it gets kind of expensive. But moving forward on that, when it comes to the, you know, to the board game, you can do some line of sighting, automated generated by the computer program. Now, and then you can assign attributes to people and, you know, have items you can pick up. Now, and use those against different, and of course there's going to have to be a mission of sorts. And the mission is going to be this, i.e. the scenario, will define what you need to do. Now, when it comes to computer board games, this, you know, because of it's a board game, and everything would be pretty much automated. You know, in that case, it almost, here's always the difficult part I have about computer games overall. You know, other than, you know, the ones of like Starfleet Battles, where they're playing against someone that's actually a tactical situation where you're trying to figure things out. And, you know, how to fight against a person versus playing against a computer. When you're playing against a computer, in my mind, it's almost, and I know that they've talked about, I've talked about it on Three Moves Ahead, and that is a computer game being as more like a puzzle than a game, than a strategic game. Because in a strategic game, it's not just that you can do this. When it becomes a strategic game and not a puzzle, and that is, you can, in a strategic game, you can do certain things to help you win the game. But it's not like, okay, you follow, you do this, 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 and this, and then you win the game. If you're doing these certain things, boom, boom, okay, you buy this, and you buy this, and you buy this, you defeat this guy, you run over here, and then you win. That's a puzzle. That's not a strategic game. Strategic game is that, okay, you plan your attacks, you build up your strengths, and then, okay, then you might fight this battle against possibly an AI, you know, a computer opponent. But there's no guarantee that you will win. There is some bit of randomness into it, you know, and what you do, you know, action reactions and all that kind of thing. So it's not just, you know, piece these things together and you win the game. You know, you might have certain strategies, certain tactics, but that's what that means. Now, using Prime Directive as a board game, this can be more of automated, and okay, this is the mission. You have to complete these tasks to a certain degree, making it more like a puzzle than anything else. That's doable, you know. Obviously, when you fight, interaction would have to be programmed in. Basically, you come down to a Prime Directive board game being a board version of interactive fiction. I saw something about that, which was, there was actually a game which was basically advertising itself as didn't bring up those two words, interactive fiction, but I'm reading this and going, oh, interactive, it's an interactive fiction game. That's what it is. Where, you know, You basically learn about the story as you go along. So, it's just kind of interesting. Now, obviously, there's the other way of doing it. Which is a little more interesting. And I think I talked about this before. It's been many years, but I think I talked about it before, which is the whole idea of using the SFU Online client as a tool for a game master to play Prime Directive on the computer with people online. Because of this, except for, you know, the whole thing where some people would prefer, like, TeamSpeak, i.e., you know, or maybe in Discord, or some other way of communicating using voice commands versus typing. To me, that's one of the things. Typing is one of those perfect mediums because it's highly recordable and highly, and you can more act, short of recording the desktop, you can easily associate what happens on a board with what's happening, with what you're describing. So, in that case, you know, that's what, when that becomes interesting, especially, and that, see, the problems that brings up its own challenges. And that is the whole idea that you've got a full board. Now, obviously, a GM might want to actually design using some kind of map overlay tool to lay down the map, but you don't want the players to see the whole map. Now, I'm hoping, I'm sure there are software out there that already do this quite well. So, you know, it's not something we'd want to compete with. Because I don't know off the top of my head, I'm sure I could probably ask a Prime Directive players to say, okay, what do you guys use for playing online against each other? You know, for campaigns, you know, what do you use to RPG online? I'm sure that in some cases they cobble together certain different sites. You know, whether it is you have one website which you can do the interactions and the map thing. You have Discord or TeamSpeak or something like that to do the voice. And then you might have another site, or you might just have personal copies of the PDFs or whatever of your character, describes your character, you know, Microsoft Word documents or Excel spreadsheets or whatever you use to record the attributes and items of that, the, you know, attribute items and strength and knowledges and all this kind of things that a player has, and that, you know, obviously shared among definitely shared among the player and the GM and possibly the other players, because but in that case I can see someone using like Google Docs to have a shared document where it has everyone's, you know, you have each person has their own spreadsheet, and that you just, okay, here's your link for your spreadsheet, here's the link for your spreadsheet, and so that people can actually see, interact with those spreadsheets online. You know, obviously you'd hope that there would be at this point a website that actually would allow you to do that interactively, have, so you can have these character sheets, base them off of like GURPS and things like that, so that you wouldn't have to do it yourself kind of thing. Whether that would support voice interaction, I'm not sure. You know, I'd say it's a more difficult stance to do that. Modern ones probably could do it. You know, obviously we have the WebRTC these days that could possibly be used, but, you know, the question is that really... Is WebRTC really ready to go mainstream? You know, I do not know. But so that brings the two different ways of doing it. Obviously, if you had it as another, going back to having a board game and have multiple players, you could do that. You know, and as long as the system was automated, the most difficult part about those kind of things is you have to have a central system that actually runs the game, you know, when it comes to the interactions of the players. And of course, the biggest issue in my mind is with get multiple players, is that you can have players that are, they kind of fudge the system, they get around the system, because in theory, each player should only be able to see so much, and they should not be able to communicate with the other player, unless they're, you know, right next to them, in which case, you should be a lot of communication. But if like one's in one part of the dungeon or complex, and you have another player in another part of the complex, they shouldn't be able to communicate with, they might be able to communicate with each other, the communicators. But in some cases, the case that you're blocked off, you know, you shouldn't be able, you know, you shouldn't be able, there should be a way of cutting that off, but you can't because it's the internet, you know. Anyhow, you know, so do I think that doing an actual Prime Directive kind of board game? And actually, let's go back. Instead of having a computer game, can we actually have it as a board game? Yeah, we could. You know, when it comes to quote unquote monsters, it wouldn't be monsters, but it would probably be base personnel. Okay, you run into them. You know, the whole idea might be to avoid them. You know, but if you interact with them, you know, there are certain characteristics of that person that you might have to roll some dice to see. Okay, how well do you interact? Do they astound the alarm? In which case, other things happen. You know, when it comes to an actual board game like that, I'm not sure how that would work. You know, because that's one of those things that's really designed for as a computer board game. At least my thoughts are that seems to be more interactively designed as a computer-based board game. You know? Which, God bless them when it comes to game designers. And having the ability to take certain things and give them the medium, which is hard cardboard and rules and so forth, make it so that it is realistic to a certain degree, you know, and trying to figure out these interactions so that it's still surprising, it still works. And because the problem with board games is that you, most part, you have perfect, you know, well, you, in theory, you can have perfect knowledge. You can actually, because you're laying down the dungeon or whatever, you're laying it down. So you know where everything goes. Obviously, in some cases, when it comes to RPGs, you'll know what the layout of the facility is because you should get a map as part of your mission. But then you have the interactions and all that kind of thing. Now, having those interactions, having rules that cover those interactions, usually die rolls and so forth, so you can say, okay, well, this person has, you know, this much personality or whatever, and they're able to get past, you know, discussing things, you know, make them believe that they're actually an officer in, like, the Romulan forces or whatever, you know, and you have different pluses based on, or minuses based on the situation, things like that, you know. But having it so that you have board game rules that actually could follow, could actually do that. In my mind, my hats are off to those game designers that have been able to do things like that, which before computers actually existed, they were able to do. You know, and to this day, there's still people who like hard copy board games versus computer games. And there's something great about those, because one of those great things about board games themselves, you know, the hard copy board games, is there's rules. You know how things interact. Those rules set up, and you know what the rules are. Compared to computer turn-based games, a lot of times you play them, and the whole idea is that you part of the quote-unquote puzzle, part of playing the game is actually trying to figure out the rules. Versus you know what the rules are, but you play according to the rules and you enjoy what you're doing anyway, even though you know what the rules are. Instead of having had an additional step of trying to figure out what the rules are. So with that, I think I will wrap up for this evening. Had a nice little quick mention about what's going on TalkShoe. I will be signing up for a sandbox and see how that goes and see, because that sounds quite interesting, because I think we might be able to stay with the TalkShoe, and the TalkShoe is actually going to be move forward. And I think that's a great thing. You know, a quick mention on where the current Starfleet Marines online portion of the client is. And of course, Prime Directive board games and Prime Directive in itself on computerization and how you might be playing those things. So with that, I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.